program to get a report from a land down under. That is, if we can find our Australian correspondent, we'll give it a go. This is Radio Parallax. I'm Douglas Everett. We'll see you next week.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Welcome to The Wheel. I'm Rebecca Chenelou, your local voice in the international movement to bring death out of the closet. I'm very happy to have you here to join the conversation as we consider the mysteries of living, dying, preparing for death, loving, grieving, and honoring our dead. This show is also about creating community, so there will be opportunities for you to participate by sharing your input on our Facebook page at The Wheel Mysteries. You can find us at The Wheel Mysteries. Go ahead and pull it up if you like. Before we get started, let's thank some of the underwriters who make this show possible. The Wheel is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts have been creating economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or to have your event listed, visit friendsof.art. And by Satava Glass Studio, creating art glass since 1977. Due to virus safety, the gallery's closed till restrictions are lifted, but online orders and information is available at satava.com. All right. Welcome again to The Wheel. I'm Rebecca Chenelou. I'm your local voice in the international movement to bring death out of the closet. I'm very happy to have you here to join the conversation. There are many directions that I could go with a show on end-of-life stuff during a pandemic. My last show, when I covered Pursue, was about love and death in the time of epidemic, and that was a pretty emotional show. So for this show, I decided to get practical and inspirational. One of the mysteries that happens when we die is the big question of what will happen to all our stuff. For my interview tonight, I'll talk with personal organizer Evelyn Hardy, who will explain the custom of Swedish death cleaning and give us practical tips for the difficult work of letting go of stuff. We'll also play our fun game, Who Died This Month?, where we will feature the music of a musician deceased during the month of April. One of my favorite parts of the show is getting to hear real-life stories from real-life people in our This American Death segment. And as usual, we will have an exit tip for your exit plan and some music and inspiration to hold it all together. We hope you'll plan to stay with us the whole show. But if you can't, the show will be archived at kzfr.org. And I also try to post a version of the show on Facebook and on SoundCloud. I think you have to Google me by my name to find me on SoundCloud, or search me in SoundCloud by my name. Before we dive in, let's remember some favorite musicians who died in the month of April. Marvin Gaye. Oh, Lord, that was a horrific one. Murdered by his father. Buddy Rich. Kurt Cobain. Tammy Wynette. Prince. Annette Funicello. Joey Ramone. Phoebe Snow. And, of course, John Prine died this month of COVID-19. What song by one of these musical now stars in our cosmos do you think I will feature at our break? Lots of exciting possibilities for Who Died This Month in the middle of the show. Many in our region have experienced the tragic loss of most of their things in the campfire. Others of us became more aware of all the stuff we have piling up but do not need. I've been particularly aware of it this weekend as my daughter, a senior finishing her bachelor's degree at San Francisco State, packed up and moved out of her room in San Francisco last weekend. She'll continue online. And as she and my husband headed off in the U-Haul to the city, I looked at my garage and tried to figure out where the heck I was going to put her stuff. Does this sound familiar? So in a sudden burst of energy born out of last-minute necessity, I uploaded 2 used appliances on Facebook Marketplace. I removed a 12-foot-long shelf and all the stuff that was on it. And I discovered some pictures from college that I had hid so well I had not been able to find them for about 2 decades. That was fun. And this is what I've been hearing from others, too, that this time of sheltering in place due to the virus has provided some much-needed downtime to dig through the vaults, discover old treasures, and then, if we're lucky, let go of some stuff. My cassette collection, for example. My cassette collection had been pushed out of the house into a drawer on the back porch, where our decrepit old boombox with a cassette player that still worked actually lives. You know that drawer. You probably have one. It has mixtapes from the 80s that you and your friends made for each other. And every one of them has a story. I remember riding in my red Chevette listening to so many of those tapes. Or at least most of them have a story. And I found a cassette tape I made when my friend Helen from Nottingham came for her one visit to the U.S. in 1993, and we rented a convertible Chrysler LeBaron and drove 3,000 miles in 6 days from Oakland to L.A. to Vegas to Zion to Tahoe to Oroville. Yes. To the Avenue of the Giants through the drive-through tree and Trinidad, and to our final destination, Cougar Hot Springs, outside of Eugene, and then drove all the way back in one day. And the whole ride, we had a boombox recording our conversations, while on the car tape player, we listened to tape after tape of the acid techno music she'd brought from her favorite DJs in Nottingham. Yes, I found that tape. And I listened to the slightly distorted voices of us in 1993, and I decided to keep that one. I actually kept about 5 cassettes, and I have a brown grocery bag full of the ones I'm getting rid of. And the whole process felt good. It was fun, the remembering and the letting go. And I bet some of you have similar stories. Thanks for listening to mine. That was fun to remember that road trip with Helen. And so I've made some room. I've lightened my load. I've done some of the practical and necessary cleaning up that we all need to know, but that is particularly important in our later years as we near the end of our lives. Tonight, I'm going to play an interview recorded at a distance via Google Voice with Evelyn Hardy, a personal organizer and owner of the business called This Mess is a Place. I like the name. We talked about the tradition of Swedish death cleaning, about how to make letting go of stuff a party, and also covered basic tips that I hope will inspire you to do a little letting go of your own. So let's listen to
Evelyn. I'm so glad you could be here with me today. I think the first question is, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became a personal organizer?
Well, it's interesting because I have been a teacher for many years, over 40 years. And I was getting near retirement, no longer passionate about what I was doing. So I was praying that God would show me something new to do because I've got too much energy just to retire and be at home and be without direction. So many times over the years, I have gone to my sister's house. She's an attorney. She lives alone. And she is not gifted in organization. So I used to go over there and rearrange her kitchen and everything. And one day she was moving into a condo, and I decided to help her move in. So I did her kitchen, and I was up doing her closet, putting her clothes away and everything. And all of a sudden, I got all these endorphins. It was like, oh my gosh, I love this. And so I was thinking, is this even a thing? So I went on the online, and I looked up organizing, and lo and behold, it's a big industry. So that's kind of how I started.
And I think the timing is good because, I mean, many of us have heard about the minimalists, maybe watched the documentary. And I think some of my listeners have probably heard of Marie Kondo and the life-changing magic of tidying up. But when we were talking, you introduced me to the idea of Swedish death cleaning, and I'd not heard of that before, but it seemed like a good topic for this show because this show is about being better prepared for death. So let's just dive right in. How do you think Swedish death cleaning helps prepare us mentally and emotionally for death?
Well, one of the main concepts of Swedish death cleaning, and this comes out of Sweden, and apparently it's part of a cultural idea there. And Sweden, if you think about it, seems like a minimalist type nation. They have this process where a person, as they're getting older, starts going through all of their belongings and decides what they still need to keep and what they want to pass on to their children, what's important to them. And it's kind of a natural progression in that culture. And so a woman wrote this book about it. And because I have dealt with a lot of seniors and a lot of people who are downsizing, who are going through the recent death of a spouse, different things like that, and then they have become kind of confused about where to go next. So it was just a wonderful book to read to kind of give some guidance to people in that situation.
So what is the name of the book again?
The book is called The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning, and it was written by Margareta Magnusson, who self-describes as a woman between 80 and death. Very funny. So what I wanted to kind of bring up is that in our culture, we are all about youth and young, and we don't deal with our coming death very easily. We avoid it. We avoid making wills. We avoid talking about death. We procrastinate about our estate planning, our burial details, all of that kind of thing. So I think that this concept of starting to look at the things that are around you and decide where they're going to go is something that is necessary for us to start looking into. We don't want to continually avoid all these discussions.
It is cultural, shifting that culture so that we don't consider it morbid, or, you know, don't consider it life denying in order to, when we just take care of what needs to be taken care of, is an important, I think it's an important aspect of why I'm doing this show.
Just to piggyback on that, I think that because we avoid things, they become very fearful for us. And what I want to introduce to people is the fact that when you start to face these things and you start to do something actually manual about them, like going through your stuff, you not only get to revisit the important memories of your life, but then you begin to let go and start and begin to realize it's not so scary, and to realize that you don't want to leave a lot of things for your kids to do that are going to cause strife and cause resentment and cause a lot of difficulty for them when you're gone. I mean, that is not how you want to be remembered.
I think another cultural problem that makes this harder for us is that our consumer culture has made it such that we've ended up with houses with a lot more stuff in it than previous generations have had to deal with, and that many other places in the world have to deal with. We have a lot of stuff.
Yeah, we do. And it ends up cluttering our minds and our views and our visions. So one of the things about going through your things and getting rid of the things you don't need anymore is that you all of a sudden can enjoy your space again. Maybe you want to redecorate a little bit, or maybe you want just a minimalist look, which is very freeing to your soul.
Yeah, I'm listening, and I agree with you, and I also am tempted here to play the devil's advocate and voice what some people might feel, which is that, but my things bring me comfort.
Well, yes, they do, and I think the things that do are the things you need to keep.
Yeah.
Keep those things around you, the things you love, the things that bring you joy and good memories, keep those. But then you need to look at them and say, is this something that's going to give joy to my children or my family members when I'm gone? Those are things you might want to put in a separate box, right on that box saying, these things are things you don't need to keep, but these were meaningful to me.
Yeah. All right. We've jumped into some process stuff. Do you have any suggestions for how to get started?
So a mindset is a really good place to start. What's helpful is to realize that there are different seasons in your life. And which season are you in right now? So there are seasons when you're accumulating. You have a family. You're making sure that you have the things you need around you. Well, that may not be the season you're in anymore. So the idea of, I can't get rid of this because I may need it later, is something to really look at and say, do I really need to hold anything for later? Am I going to need it? Our parents went through the Depression. I know places where they have walls full of canned goods that maybe were canned in the 40s or the 50s, and they keep all of that because of a a fearful thing they went through earlier. Well, that's the kind of thing we need to kind of clear ourselves from and free ourselves from.
I like the idea of saying, am I really going to need this? When you start looking at the amount of time you have left, it fits into this Swedish desk cleaning motif for sure. You know, I recently helped a friend move, and it involved going through all of her stuff. And a question that often came up is this valuable? You're going through things. You've got a painting. You've got a vase. And when you're trying to decide whether to let go of something, in addition to the emotional, sentimental value that it has, sometimes we're just wondering, what's the actual value? How do you help people navigate that question?
I think eBay is a really good source of that, to try to get the item defined and then look on eBay and find out what that item might be selling for. If it's an antique, you might want to talk to an antique auctioneer. I had a dear older couple in their 80s who were downsizing. They had the most gorgeous tiger oak furniture all through their house, something that years ago I would have just died to have because I was into antiques back then. Nobody wants it now. Those are hard things to deal with, especially if there are things you've been carrying around from your mother, your grandmother, your great-grandmother. I mean, are those things worth it? And then the other thing is it valuable to someone that you love? And that's a good question to ask when you have a daughter or a son over, to say, you know, I'm going to get rid of things. Why don't you tell me what you would love me to keep for you? And that way you're not saying, I'm going to die, pick what you want. You're saying to them, I'm thinking of getting rid of this. And that way people aren't quite so averse to saying, yes, I want it.
Wow, that's a very good tip. Don't bring it up in the context of, I don't know how long I'll be around. So,
right.
But just, you know, I'm thinking of getting rid of this. Do you want it? Great question. I like it. Yeah, the value of things, I think we often hope that they're more valuable than they are. I'm
yes.
thinking of a friend who was in charge of an estate of a man who had collected art and had a lot of paintings that he thought were valuable and he had spent good money on, but he thought it was a great idea to bequeath this art to art galleries at universities and this sort of thing. And nobody wanted this art. Their basements are full of donations of art that people would hope would be desired by others or by galleries, but actually the space for that stuff is limited. And you need to be sure you know whether it's going to be valuable to someone else or whether it's going to be wanted before leaving it to someone else to manage.
That's a very good point. I would suggest also, if someone is in that situation, that they do contact a professional organizer, because we have a network of people and we share all of these ideas so that when we have a client that needs to find a home for something, we have references and referrals to places that we can try.
And we that's a great idea.
Right.
I mean, there are different brokers for different kinds of things.
Yes.
And for someone who doesn't have experience in it, it's a hassle just trying to figure out who's the best person to help me move this stuff and to call someone who has experience and resources on hand. That would be helpful, I would imagine. So let's say we've gotten down to the point where you've talked to your family, you have your special teapot or your war memorial things, and you've decided who's going to get them. But is there a best way to keep track of it? Like I've got stuff at my mom's house that we've talked about. We have the conversation, and both of us are of an age that our memories are not that good, and I've kind of forgotten what we said. And so do you put stickers on things? Do you make a list? What do you suggest?
I think that's a great idea. If the items are in containers, to put a sticker on the box that names the items and perhaps who they're going to. And that way, when the time comes, that information is recorded somewhere physically, so you actually know when you're going through that container who gets what. So
yeah, I find that it has come up in sort of casual conversation, but it always seems kind of weird to say, okay, I'm going to go get the piece of paper and write this down and tape it on there or whatever. But it really needs to happen that way.
Really, or even on your phone, put it in the notes section. If you have that on your telephone just while you're talking.
Oh, the phone is a great idea. To have a note page with that stuff in your phone would be, that's a good idea.
And the other thought about when you ask your people what they want, if it's a picture, put a little sticky note on the back of the picture with their name on it, or maybe a little red dot on something that you know is going to go up in the attic, and the red dot goes to Sally, and the green dots go to Joe, you know. Just some way that you can keep track, because yes, your memory does tend to go. I lost my husband about 8 years ago, and I found out that he promised a couple things to two different kids that were the same, and that was kind of confusing after he unexpectedly passed away. So that was hard.
People don't realize how much potential conflict they can avoid by being clear in their wishes, because these kind of confusions happen all the time. Someone says, no, she said she was going to give it to me. No, she said she was going to give it to me. And, you know, as we get older, our conversations, we forget what we said, and having it written down in some way, or the phone idea. I like that. It's such a great idea.
Another suggestion about that, because I have 6 children. So if I were to do this with my children and somebody wanted the same thing, that would be difficult. So what I would do is, when I'm asking that question, I would also ask, rate this, how important it is to you. And depending on the amount of people you have, is this something that is a number one for you? You must have it, or you don't care that much? You know, like, rate it 1 through 4, maybe, in the order of importance it is to you. And that way, if someone else comes along and you do that same process with them and they say, oh, you know, if nobody else wants it, you know, that kind of thing, you can actually put that little sticker on the back with the names and the rating. That avoids some problems as well.
Now, this is an interesting suggestion that I read in one of the articles that you sent me, was to make it a party. And this, some of those things that you're talking about happening in different conversations at different times could be resolved with the make it a party suggestion. And and the reason this appealed to me is because I know this is often how it goes when someone dies. At some point, family and friends are invited to come in and go through the house and take stuff. I mean, sometimes people have sort of gone through the house and put stuff out in the living room. That's how it was for my grandma. Sometimes it's just walking through the house, which it's a weird kind of party, Evelyn. I mean, everyone is sad. It's awkward to say what you want to take and what you don't want. And how many of us, I mean, want people wandering through our house looking through our underwear drawers after we're dead? And yet it sometimes happens that way. So it makes much more sense to me to have people over when you're still alive and can orchestrate it a little bit.
Absolutely. I read a story that just really touched me. There was a couple in the D.C. area, and they lived in one of those nice Federalist side-by-side houses, beautiful, kind of like a brownstone. And they were downsizing. And so what they did was they took all of the things that they were going to take with them, and they put it aside, or they put it into their new place. And after that, they took all of their glassware, and they put it out on their dining table, and they made mimosas, and they invited all their friends and family over, and they said, okay, grab yourself a mimosa, here's some snacks, you take the glass with you when you go, and then you go through the house. And it was a first come, first serve, which needs to be said. And of course, you would go through this with your family first, I think, to make sure that none of the important things that they want go to a stranger. But books were included in this, DVDs, CDs, just everything that was left on the premises was for the big party, including the furniture.
And that's a great idea. It's a great idea for getting rid of the books and DVDs and CDs. I think that's one of the more overwhelming aspects, is those things that we have stacks of and that, you know, involve sorting. I like that. And another thing I like about the party idea is that I think that often what we're holding on to is the stories that a special item holds, more than just the item itself. It's the memories that the item holds for us. And if we're going to be passing things on, it would be nice to have the opportunity to tell the story that goes with it. And when someone dies and then the family has to go through this stuff, it's often hard for people to know what is the story that went with this. So
absolutely.
Tell the stories.
I'm so sad that all of my parents and grandparents are gone, because I have all those questions and I didn't ask them early enough to know the answer. And so that's exactly true. Thank goodness one of my middle children spent a lot of time with my father, and she recorded all of his stories because she stayed with him. And that is so precious to us now, because he had Alzheimer's. And after a while, we couldn't ask him anything. And so it was just such a wonderful thing that she got his stories.
Oh, that's a great idea. And we talked about taking a picture with our phone of an item. But, I mean, if you're going to have your phone out, why not just hit the voice record and have your mom tell you the story of the item? And,
absolutely.
You know, have the story. Oh, I love that idea. Well, moving along more to the nitty gritty, I think we tend to be unrealistic about how long it takes to go through a lifetime of stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. I hear stories of friends saying, it took me 2 years to get everything cleared out and the estate settled, or 3 years. And we think, oh, I'll just let my kids deal with it. I had to do it for my folks or whatever, but it's not always like that. I mean, I had an aunt who had three adult children who all went down and cleared her place out in a week, but she had moved several times already, and she mm-hmm. was already living, you know, had really pared down. So, of course, it's different for everyone, but do you have any thoughts about getting realistic in terms of what it takes to go through a house?
Yes, and the reason it takes so long when someone has already passed is you have no context for their items. It's just a jumble of stuff to you because it doesn't hold any meaning. But when you do it yourself, again, I was saying earlier, it gives you the opportunity to look at things and to say, okay, why did I keep that? I don't need it anymore. Let me get rid of it. Or this has a special memory, but I'll keep it over here in a special box. So there's a lot more to it when you're doing it yourself. If you start small, and I'm suggesting a purse or a drawer, a junk drawer, or, you know, just some place in your house that you know is messy and it's very small, it's amazing how much impetus for continuing on you'll get once you get the satisfaction of organizing that. And I would suggest that you get organizing items. So if you're doing a junk drawer, go and get one of those drawer divider items that you can put in there so that each thing that you leave in the drawer has its own spot within that drawer. It's not just jumbled and just cleaned out. It's all got a place. There's such a satisfaction to opening that drawer and seeing that. And just doing a small one will give you energy and excitement about going to the next place. If you're the type of person that wants to start hugely going through your closet, okay, that's just fine. That's who you are. It's an individual thing. But if you've never done it before, I would say start small and let that excitement build in you, and then give yourself some goals. Okay, every single day this week, I'm going to clean the drawer. And then before you know it, your whole kitchen or your whole office is done. Just a small job every day that might take an hour or so, and then pretty soon you're building on that.
This time of being home due to the coronavirus seems like an ideal time to do the sweetest cleaning. And I think you're right, breaking it down into small, doable pieces so it's not taking over and feeling overwhelmed, but just getting a little bit done each day is a great idea. There are, however, right now, many of the thrift stores that are not accepting donations. So when I was thinking about doing this interview during our sheltering in place, I wondered if you have suggestions for places.
That's a very good point, and very few are accepting anything at this point. So in the purging, even when you're starting small in the drawer or so, what you want to do is get rid of things that are out of date, You want to find out whatever garbage is in there, because there's garbage everywhere. Anything that's used up or whatever, and that's in the garbage. And then anything that you could give away to somebody that you know would use it and wants it. So put that in a separate container, the giveaway. Then the donations, just put it in a large garbage bag, set it aside in your sight until these times are over, and they will be eventually. The other thing you can do, if there are any things around your house, I have several acres where I live, so we have all kinds of stuff that has kind of accumulated. So I went around with my camera, and I posted things that were no longer needed but still useful onto Facebook Marketplace, and I couldn't believe all the response I got from there. And people will just come, you just put a little price on it, or you say, give me a best offer, and they can come out and take it away. And if you live in a city where you have a driveway or someplace where you can put a free box out there, that's another good thing.
Yeah, I think of Facebook Marketplace is kind of like setting it out at the end of your driveway for free, but you got a lot, you have a much larger audience.
And junk haulers are still working, and the dumps are open. So garbage, if you have a lot of things and they just really just need to be, I mean, we love to recycle, we love to reuse things, but if it's really not going to service anyone anymore, take it to the dump.
And then don't replace it with more stuff. I'm heartbroken when I find out that I have so much stuff that's just garbage. And then it should be a strong motivator to not get that kind of stuff, not bring that kind, not buy that kind of stuff, not let that kind of stuff back in.
And I think that would be the challenge for us when we feel like we need to go out and buy things. What are we really feeding, and can we turn that urge into something that's more positive? Can we start writing or drawing or walking or, you know, something that is going to be a positive?
Yeah, I think that psychology of getting rid of stuff, letting go of stuff, is another whole program. It's very, you know, fascinating how the, you know, we get attached to things that we're used to, and how hard it can be to let them go. But I think we're about out of time. So what I would like to do is hear a little bit more about your business, Evelyn. I love the name. Why don't you tell us the name of your business and how to find you?
Okay. The name of my business is This Mess is a Place, and it's just a little pun. This place is a mess. Turn it around and make it someplace that's nurturing and calming and you love to be. You can find me on thismessisaplace.org, and I'm also on Facebook under This Mess is a Place. And I would love to talk with you. I work with people in every walk of life, every age group. I can do your pantry. I can help you downsize. I can help you move into your house and put things away in a place that's functional for you. And I don't judge. I've worked with people who have been actual hoarders. I want people to know that no matter how messy or embarrassing they think their place is, that doesn't faze me. That just gives me excitement to help them get through it.
I really appreciate you being on the show. I think we've gotten a lot of good tips. Evelyn Hardy from This Mess is a Place. Thank you so much for being on my show.
It was my pleasure, and thank you so much for having me.
Thank you again to Evelyn. All right. So our mystery musician this month died on April 21st, 2016, at the age of 57, a terrible loss. And although I could find no really recent news, as of the 3-year anniversary of his death in 2019, his estate was far from being settled due to feuding family members, very complex assets, and, you can probably guess what I'm going to say, no will or trust. This is a cut from a lesser-known release called Piano and a Microphone. See if you can guess who it is.
No, Mary, don't you be late. Oh, Mary, don't you moan, moan.
jewelry.
Oh, Prince, so much soul there. I miss him. And many lessons we have learned from you. How to party like it's 1999. And how important it is to have our affairs in order, even before we reach our elder years. Alrighty, I'm going to read some underwriters. I'm going to thank some underwriters here. The Wheel is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Northern Star Mills, serving the North Valley with farm, garden, and pet supplies since 1898. Northern Star Mills offers natural and organic soil amendments and fertilizers, as well as natural and holistic pet supplies. Northern Star Mills is located in downtown Chico, across from Bidwell Mansion. And by Dr. Michael Shule, clinical psychologist, offering psychotherapy for adults and play therapy for children. Dr. Shule helps people find meaning and depth in their lives and deal with issues, including depression, anxiety, and trauma. Dr. Shule also works with children as young as 5. Located in Chico, Dr. Shule can be reached at 894-6292. Now shifting gears, I wonder, have you ever been with someone when they were dying? Think about it. Was it peaceful? Was it painful? Was it powerful? Was it all of the above? Or maybe you're one of the many amongst us who has never been with someone when they died. In America, people often make it to middle age and sometimes even older without ever having been present at a death. And I think this lack of familiarity with the dying process is very different from the old days and different from the experience of others around the world where lifespans are shorter, medical care is less advanced, and death often happens at home. I'm not saying that familiarity with the process makes death easy, but I think it can make it easier. So on each show, I like to hear someone tell their story in a segment we call This American Death. Tonight, we'll hear from my colleague, counselor, and friend, Karuna Duvall.
I am a hospice chaplain currently working in New Hampshire, living in Vermont. I'm also a licensed clinical social worker. What I remember about my dad, his name was Frank, and he died in November of 2011. He died of lung cancer, COPD, emphysema. And he was the kind of man who was very strong work ethic, and was a simple man of sorts. He really lived simply in his life. He didn't have a lot of complications. He didn't have a lot of stuff. life simply. He had a little wooden plaque on his shelf in his living room that just said, simplify, right? Simplify. And I saw that every time I went over there. So that was his real strong value system that I think I really picked up in my life, and especially as he approached his end of life. So he died in November of 2011, 2 days before Thanksgiving. And in September of that year, I got a call, and we thought he was dying. I was in California, and he was in Chicago. So I left California to go to Chicago, thinking I was going to get there, and he was going to die. But he didn't. He rallied. And in his rallying, true to form, he made plans. He made sure that all of the things that needed to be taken care of around his death were taken care of. The funeral home, the luncheon afterwards, including the menu, and all the things that he wanted to have for his end of life, he made sure to take care of so that we were not going to have a hard time when he was dying. And that was wonderful. So when he did pass in November, it was 2 days before Thanksgiving, and we were all around his bed when he took his last breath. I was able to be a kind of support for my family because I knew about hospice, I knew about death and dying, and kind of helped them know what to expect. And he died very peacefully, and it was wonderful. The day after he died was the day before Thanksgiving, and that day we spent getting the funeral ready. He had already done a lot of the preparation. We just had to go over to the church and talk to the priest and make sure that the songs that my dad wanted were there and were available, and the readings, and then went over to the banquet hall and got the luncheon all set. And, you know, it really didn't take us a long time. The day after Thanksgiving, that Friday, we went over to my dad's condo, and he didn't, like I said, didn't have a lot of stuff. When we were there, it took us 4 hours to go through his stuff, to separate what was being thrown out, what we were going to give away, and what we were going to take. All his papers were in order. Everything was there. It was wonderful. And the one thing, too, that he wanted, that he said in September, was that the little plaque, the Simplify plaque, he wanted on his casket. And so we took that little plaque, and that following Monday when we had the wake and the funeral, we had that little plaque on his casket, and it was really beautiful. And in honoring my dad, about 2 weeks after I returned from Chicago, I got a tattoo on my right forearm that says Simplificare. It's Simplify in Italian, because my dad's family is Italian, as a way to honor him and to remind me of that wonderful value of living simply. And that was also translated into his death as well. He wanted to be cremated. He didn't want to be buried in the cemetery with the gazillion other family members in Lamont, Illinois. But he didn't have a place to be buried, so he was able to ask his best friend, my godfather, to have his ashes interred in his crypt. And so that's what he did. The simplicity of his life translated to the way in which he not just lived his life, but identified family as being not just blood, but chosen family. That's what he was able to do in his living, his dying, and his death. And that's what I try.
Thank you, Karuna, for sharing your story. You know, several things about this story resonate with me. First, it's a positive story, and it shows us that not all death stories are grim or sad or scary. Some are just natural and smooth. And I hope you have experienced death stories like that. And you can hear it in the lightness of her voice. And she has a comfort level with this stuff because she's been around it quite a bit. And she helped her family be more comfortable with it by telling them what to expect. And I really think it does help to have people who can tell you what to expect or to know what to expect. And the other thing that stands out is that it only took them 4 hours to clean out his condo. And I think that has to be some kind of record. But what a relief. What a huge final gift he gave his family. Simplificare. Thank you, Frank. Okay. Now, about your exit plan. Before we finish up tonight, I want to leave you with a tip for your exit plan. And as you know, if you've listened to my show before, the exit plan is all those little things you do to prepare for your death. And we often put these things on the back burner. But tonight, during this time of COVID-19, I hope you will commit to doing one thing, just one thing, for your exit plan within the next week. You may already have something on your list that you've been putting off and you know you need to do. So if so, go ahead and do that. But I chose to follow up on the fun suggestion to capture stories related to important family heirlooms. I love the idea of taking a picture on your phone and then recording the details about it in your own voice or in your loved one's voice. And I've discovered a free app for that. Legacy Stories. Legacy Stories is not designed specifically for this purpose, but it works. In less than 10 minutes, I downloaded the free app onto my Android phone. I opened an account. I took a picture of my mom and dad's 50th anniversary celebration. I recorded a brief story about the picture. I uploaded it, and I was able to decide who I wanted to share it with. It's so easy, and it's fun. So I have posted a link for legacystories.org at The Wheel Mysteries on Facebook. Setting up this app will be a very helpful tool for my exit plan, and I can't wait to use it at my mom and dad's house. What is one thing that you're going to do for your exit plan this week? All right, I'm your cheerleader, or your hand holder, or your butt kicker. That's what I always say. I decided to close today with a few quotes from the wisdom traditions about letting go of stuff. Karuna and I both met at an interfaith seminary, so it got me thinking about that. And this well-known verse from the New Testament is what I'll read first. It gives us Jesus's take on the matter, and it's from Matthew. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So, where do you want your heart to be? What is your focus? And what does your heart treasure? I looked very hard for a quote from the Islamic mystic poet Rumi because I know it almost by heart, but I could not find it. So if any of you can find it, you win the prize of the week. But it goes like this. I remember how it ends. It says, when you die, or Rumi says, when you die, your possessions don't even come to the funeral. Your family and friends can make it to the graveside, but not beyond. But it is your actions that will follow you. And so I think that's a good teaching, too. It's what you do that will make the difference, not what you have. And lastly, a quote from the Buddhist tradition, Thich Nhat Hanh, Letting go gives us freedom, and freedom is the only condition for happiness. If, in our heart, we still cling to anything, anger, anxiety, or possessions, we cannot be free. Do you want to feel free? All right, I like that. Or in the wise words of a wise unknown someone, you can't take it with you. So if nothing else spoke to you, perhaps that will. My next episode of The Wheel will be on July 30th, the fifth Thursday in July. So mark your calendar. In the time between now and then, let's be in touch. Do you have stories you would like to share, topics that you would like covered, or questions that you want answered on my show? Please post them at The Wheel Mysteries on Facebook, or you can email me at thewheelmysteries@gmail.com. You can also listen to past shows by digging through the past events on The Wheel Mysteries Facebook page, or by searching for Rebecca Chenelou on SoundCloud.com. I encourage you to explore and reflect on the mysteries of living, dying, preparing for death, loving, grieving, and honoring our dead. In the meantime, share your stories, express your wishes, and write them down. And remember, friends, talking about death won't kill you.
I never meant to call you any sorrow. I never meant to call you.